And welcome to another episode of Nights at the Roundtable. It's your boy, Man Weezy. I got B-Real to the left.
I'm here.
And joining us on the pod today, our homie, Ben Kirby from Preachers and Sneakers. How are you doing, my G?
Yo. I'm good. Thanks for having me, y'all. This is fun to be with you.
Thanks for coming on, man. I've been wanting to talk your Marvel origin story for so long. Because for those of y'all who don't know it, Ben started an Instagram page called Preachers and Sneakers, where he would effectively take some shots of preachers wearing expensive shoes and kind of put the price on the side so that everyone can see what it was. Mm-hmm. And kind of like let the comments go wild. And my favorite thing was coming to the comments.
Oh, man.
Because I was one of those, so I wasn't going to be one that'd be like, I can't believe you spent that much. When I have the price of sneakers that I had, you could buy a house. But when I just went to the comments to see, mainly, this was my guilty pleasure, to see how nasty people got.
Because so heated.
Because they got so mad. And I was like, this is freaking genius. I can't believe no one has thought of this before. Because, you know, we're in the culture. I see it. No, I don't really, whatever. I never think anything of it. But that's because also, you know, I'm no longer poor. So I didn't think of I don't know if that's bad to say, but.
No, it's real. It's real.
It's like, I don't think of it because.
Keeping it a buck.
Yeah, they got the same stuff
a
I
few
got.
Bucks, clearly.
So it's like, I didn't think of anything of it. But when I saw the comments, I'm like, man, people really feel a certain type of way. So tell us at what point. And where you were at to where you thought, bruh, I think this is a dope idea. Let me give this a swing.
Yeah. It's interesting how a pretty simple concept can cause so many people to get so pissed. This was, so like 4 years ago now, wow. Which is hard to comprehend. But 4 years ago, I had noticed a worship leader was wearing some Yeezy 750s that were reselling for like $800 on StockX. And if people don't know what StockX is, it's basically like the stock market for new sneakers, where you can buy and resell sneakers. And such is supply and demand. The more in-demand sneakers, the price inevitably goes up. And so I made a few posts just on Instagram sitting at home because I was like, dang, these, like a lot of people initially are like, dude, this guy's wearing $800 sneakers. That makes me feel some type of way for no good reason.
Right.
But I didn't realize that until later. So I just made some posts, made some snarky comments. I mean, I had like 300 personal followers. I had no plan or anything. And then I had a buddy who was kind of in the music industry. I had a few thousand followers. He messaged me. He was like, dude, I live in LA. There's preachers like this all up and down the coast that hang with Bieber, that have all these crazy, like Supreme and Off-White, all this crazy streetwear. You should just make an account doing what you just did, posting a picture or reposting a picture of a pastor's preaching picture and then putting the market value of the sneaker right next to it. And the name within a few minutes came to me where it's like thinking about what rhymes with sneakers or what rhymes with preachers one way or the other, but preachers and sneakers rhymes pretty easily. And so I made the handle, I copied over those posts that I made originally. And a month later I had 100,000 followers.
Oh my God. A month later?
4 weeks, and was talking to the New York Times and was every media outlet ever was trying to reach out and find out who I was because I was apparently like causing quite a rift with a lot of people. And I had no clue what I was doing. I had no plan. I wasn't equipped for that. I wasn't really interested in being like a activist for change within modern church culture. But very quickly I realized something was happening, and so tried to like figure out a plan from there. And then, you know, 4 years later I'm still here. It's kind of a If you're in church culture now and you wear some expensive shoes and you got a large following, you'd be pretty naive to think that you weren't going to end up on Preachers and Sneakers at this point.
Right, right.
So it's
right.
Just an interesting like place in Christian culture, I guess, that it has. And so it's been an interesting 4 years.
So initially then, what you're saying is you felt a certain type of way. What was that way? Like, what was what you felt initially?
Yeah, there was part of me that was just annoyed at maybe ignorance is a strong word, but like being naive to the fact that wearing super expensive clothing wouldn't evoke emotion in a regular rational person. Like just trying to think, like for somebody that makes 40K a year, the idea of someone wearing some Red Octobers that are reselling for $5,000 to $10,000 is impossible to comprehend. Like
right.
putting a pair of $5,000 shoes on your feet when you make a $40,000 salary it's immediately yeah. causes your brain to explode. And so that's what happened. And I was, the feedback that I got before we started the podcast was there was a lot of conversations happening about this kind of thing where they're worship leaders, pastors that seemingly were putting a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths, but nobody could put a finger to it or why it made them feel uncomfortable or feel gross or feel like it was wrong. And just me kind of pointing to the sneakers aspect of it was, I think, cathartic for a lot of people. And it's still to be decided if it's for better or for worse. Like a lot of people in the comments are very nasty to each other on one side or the other. But initially, and what I think caused a lot of the growth was I was making these kind of snarky, funny comments that I felt for whatever reason, I was just rattling them off. Like yeah. it was a moment of inspiration. I don't consider myself a writer or a comedic. I like to make my friends laugh, but I didn't have any experience like writing jokes. But for whatever reason, the sneaker stuff, I could just rattle off these one-liners that caused people to really laugh. And part of it was, like I've been transparent about this. Part of it was I had originally thought it was wrong. Like I couldn't see a reason why it would ever be appropriate to get on stage to preach about Jesus in a pair of shoes that could pay someone's mortgage. I've come around and I've had a lot of nuanced conversations about it, and I don't expect everyone to be able to have those, but my worldview on all that has definitely morphed a bit since the beginning.
Mm. Yeah, it's crazy because I remember at some point, this was some years back, and someone had told me about this account. Because growing up in church circles, I've been around like, you know, the who's who in that world. And, mm-hmm. you know, as someone who has always had, I guess, luxurious taste buds, former professional basketball player, I was kind of like, yo, this is part of it. I love fashion, right. all those sorts of stuff. But I always personally felt a weird way when we're going to these places and you're stepping in these green rooms and it's like almost it's like a runway. Like you're like, yo, he just spent like, you know, 15K on this jacket. That's crazy. You know, yeah. and you're thinking like, wait, where is this money coming from? You know, like all those sorts of questions.
Right. And that's what makes it weird is that historically pastors have been financed by the like sacrificial donations right. of the people that go to the church. And so that's like the additional element that really makes it different from the NBA example.
Right.
Because like no one has or most people don't have an issue. Like I was with my friend Justin Holiday, he just played for the Mavericks. I don't yeah. know where he's gonna end up now. But when you're playing basketball, everyone like that is expected. The walk in, right. it's expected to be like that. But now if you're considering yourself a pastor and you believe the calling on your life is that there's like some pretty strict definitions
yeah.
And like requirements for that if you believe in the Bible. And so it just, that causes a lot of really kind of messiness, and money and Christianity are always messy topics. And I wouldn't have selected this as my expertise, but here we are. You know?
I mean, it is. It's something that I've always, I've never had the feeling of negativity with, and it's probably because I always give people the benefit of the doubt. Like yeah. in my mind, I'm like, you know, they probably got it somewhere else. They probably, yeah. you know, whatever. And if it is something negative, it'll get found out and God will take care of it. I'm not going to like throw that on them. I'll be like,
yeah,
good for you. I right. do, on the other hand, though, probably feel like it would be pertinent for you to decipher your congregation, right? So if you're a pastor in Scottsdale, sure. Why not? Because yeah. the whole room is like, bro, yeah, I had those 2 years ago. Or, you know, like I can get those if I want. But if you're a pastor in Compton, then that probably isn't the best move to do because, yeah, those of us who know, we know. And I think what caused more of the outcry is that you were shining a light on a culture that probably most people didn't even know. Like they probably wouldn't even know that those are Octobers. They wouldn't 100%. Even know what to even consider. 100%. And then when you bring that knowledge to them, it's like, wait, what? They're shoes that cost that much? Because I know when I'm in the Christian industry, 95% of the audience is a Walmart Target audience. And I don't mean that to like diss anyone. It's just, it's the Bible Belt. It's the South. It's very much, you know,
the average person.
Yes, the normal average person is not trying to freaking go to Barney's or Saks to go shop. So they're not going to know the brand. I had a nurse ask me yesterday. Three nurses were like, oh my gosh, I love your sweatpants. And I was like, thanks. And one of them goes, what are they? And I said, Amiri. And she looked at me like, like she didn't know what to say. She was like, oh.
Is that Walmart? Is that Target?
Can I get those on Amazon?
Yeah.
She probably would have flipped the conniption when she found out they're like $900 sweatpants. She would have been like, what the hell? Yeah. But most people don't think that there's things out there like this. So when they're first, you know, introduced to it, you can't help but start that emotion. It's like, man, I'm kind of whatever. And sadly to say, I feel like it. And I don't know if this is a bad way of looking at it, but I felt this way even when I was broke. I felt like it came from a mentality of lack. Like as if I can't understand that because I will never be able to get that. So I feel a certain type of way and I'm just going to say it. What do you think?
You could see how much there is there from just the sneakers. Like this is it gets to be a pretty deep conversation where you're talking about like envy and personal branding and like how much do you cave to the opinions of strangers if you're in ministry, like especially if you're running essentially a social media ministry.
Yeah.
Do you care about how your appearance or the message that your appearance is sending to strangers across the world? Like you want the influence of having a million followers, but you're also annoyed that the haters are in your DMs. Like, dude, like they're allowed to have criticisms, whether they're fair or not. It's just like the nature. Like I get blown up all the time still about like criticisms that I don't enjoy, but it's just part of being it. So that's one thing, like being aware and sensitive to the calling on your life and also the audience that you've been given. Like if you have a million followers, it's at least wise to consider how you're projecting or how you're presenting yourself to those million people.
Right.
And it's foolish to not. I think it's foolish to just bury your head in the sand and be like, they're just haters. And if they're just haters, then hopefully you have people around you that can say, yeah, dude, like that's, you don't love this stuff so much that it's part of your identity. We know who you are. We know that you worked hard and sold all these books or whatever for this nice pair of shoes. Then like wear those confidently and securely. What's tough is when people like react super negative and insulting or like in a mean spirit because someone's kind of questioning the way they do things on social media, or the way they go about ministry. But that's like kind of, you kind of promise that that's going to happen if you're given that responsibility.
Right.
So when you first started this, you said in a month it got to 100K. Obviously, that was a huge surprise, I'm assuming. Outside of that, what was the biggest surprise in this account that you started just blowing up?
Yeah. Yeah. It was, it's not good for, I don't think humans are equipped to have experiences like that because it's crazy and there's no way to manage it unless you like delete your account or go fully private. Mm-hmm. When your account is going viral like that, I mean, there was moments where I was gaining like 20,000 followers an hour and getting thousands of messages. And I'm like, dude, this feels out of control. And this feels like, I don't know what to do with this. So yeah, it was crazy just seeing the thousands of people come in at first and why just so many people cared. Cause I was nobody. Yeah. I wasn't running ads. I wasn't promoting it. I was just like making these posts and people were organically sharing them. So on one hand, it feels really cool. It's like, oh, I've got this thing figured out that's unique. It's so hard to be differentiated online when everyone's copying everyone.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to like feel like to get people to actually connect with what you're putting out there. And this was also on the opposite end of the spectrum where people were furious and also like loved what I was doing at the same time. And so I was kind of thrown into the middle where not woe is me, but just like the fact where like I had people that were furious.
Yeah.
And then I had people that were in love with what I was doing, both saying that they were Christians. And so it's kind of hard to contend with that, where it's like, is what I'm doing good or is what I'm doing bad?
But when you say furious, what were they furious about?
A whole host of things, this like assuming intent, saying that pastors can't have nice things, judging them for quote spending so much money or not knowing how much they do in the world and in the community and the impact that they make, when all I was doing was just literally posting the picture that they posted themselves and showing the market value, the true market value of what the shoes were. And so I felt pretty secure in that, like, what I was doing was amoral. Like, I was literally delivering a fact. But to your point earlier, a lot of people would have never known that had I not brought it up. And so there was this kind of, some people saw it as, like, you're just creating division or you're just clout chasing, like trying to bring people down in order to bring yourself up, all that kind of stuff. And that was every day at varying levels. I mean, people were questioning my salvation, saying like God was going to hold me accountable for the souls of people that were lost because of people going away from the faith from looking at my account or being in my comment section, stuff like that. And so it like got real heavy. And that started pretty quickly because there are some crazy freaking people on the internet and crazy Christian people on the internet. And so that was a shock to just kind of be the recipient of a ton of varying criticism. And then it was also, I mean, it's cool to grow an account like that. It's cool to, like, mainstream celebrities were reaching out to me interested in what I was doing, like Questlove. like famously the first 6 months of my account wore one of my hoodies at a red carpet event for like the Shaft remake. And people like Joel McHale, who's a comedian in LA, wrote the foreword to my book. Like these, I'm just this nothing normal dude. I was in the military. I was in getting my master's in business at the time that are like reaching out to me. Like Haley from Paramore was a fan of the account. John Mayer follows my account. It's so, it's just like, that's not me. It sounds like a flex, but that was a cool thing that happened. It's like,
sure.
John Mayer is like, like selfishly an idol of mine. And now him and I are talking over DMs all because of these freaking preachers wearing sneakers. It was just crazy. So that was,
no, I mean, I can't imagine what it would feel like. And I didn't even think to imagine those kind of, messages that you'd get. Because I thought if someone's going to be furious, it's going to be at the people that you're posting about, not at you. I feel like more people would be like, good for you for calling them out. Like, I feel like that's where I would have seen the furious and not people actually saying you're going to be responsible for people.
These guys have some diehard fans, and that's part of it too. Like, once you kind of poke holes at somebody's idol, it feels like an attack. And so a lot of people would kind of lash out as if I was attacking their idol pastor or worship leader or whatever. So stuff got crazy there for a while.
Did you ever get reached out to by any of the pastors or worship leaders?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of them.
In a good way.
Some were cool. Some were not cool.
the ones who are not cool, did you post extra on them?
I made a point to not, because I was feeling, I knew I wasn't in a good heart space because people just like sending me these multi-paragraph, basically screaming at me DMs, like very well-known pastors and worship leaders. I said it in the documentary, but like Carl Lentz and I spoke a few times, and some of his people and I spoke a few times. I talked with the original guy that I posted about, Mac Brock. Him and I met up in person a few times. He used to be the worship leader at Elevation.
Yeah,
he was the one wearing those Yeezys, and he was cool about it. He also didn't like, I mean, I posted about him a couple of times. It wasn't fun for people to pile on him, but he at least got it. So over the years, I've had conversations with a lot of them. Judah Smith did an interview with me for my audio book that I really appreciated him doing, because he's like the head honcho. I mean, he's very LA, Seattle, church culture, right, Bieber's guy. And I had a lot of respect for him for being willing to just have a conversation with me when a lot of them, were just kind of subtweeting me a bit, and I didn't expect anything from them, but it was, I just appreciated the ones that were willing to at least engage, even though like I would have been fine had they not engaged.
Sure.
But Judah specifically, I really appreciated him doing that because he didn't have to, and he's a super busy dude. But there was a level of security with him that he was like, yeah, dude, I think it's a fair question. Also, I get gifted a lot of really nice stuff, and I've got to contend with that. And it's part of it. Like, I appreciated him willing to self-reflect or be introspective about what everybody was all spun up about.
Yeah, that's so interesting because at the end of the day, it is a choice. Like, you really do have to decide whether you want the smoke. Like, I remember my president of our Bible college. I remember one time I came to school and there was this brand new red Corvette parked in the main pathway of the school. And I was like, oh, snaps, whose Corvette is that? And one of the leaders was like, oh, they gave that to Rutland. This rich dude wanted to say thank you and just gave it to the president. And Rutland was like, oh, thank you so much. Real gracious, real gracious. And didn't take it. Just left it at the school. Like, he was like, I don't want the smoke. I don't want it. Even though this guy's like multiple books, successful out the wazoo, multimillionaire. He didn't want the smoke. So he didn't take it. And my pastor in Orlando, he would always drive a 3 to 4 year old Lexus. Never, even though that dude's a millionaire too, for sure. Mm-hmm. He would never buy newer than a 4 year old car because he never wanted his congregation to see him drive something brand new and look flashy. I was like,
and he probably still got the smoke a little bit with the Lexus. I mean, like, sure. brands cause people to be weird. Like a new Suburban versus a 10-year-old Beamer. You're going to get smoke for the 10-year-old Beamer versus the new Suburban that costs $100,000.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not rational, but I think it's born in wisdom to know, like, all right, I could drive this. Like, I have the freedom to drive this, but I also know I'm going to have to answer to this to a lot of people, and it's going to irritate me. Like, what's worth it? Or,
yeah.
I mean, but also that kind of stuff happens all the time. Like, these dudes, I know for a fact, Judah and some of the other men have been gifted like really, really nice, expensive watches that are hard to even comprehend. Like, these guys get tons of really nice gifts.
When
you roll with Bieber, Bieber's got unlimited money. And if if Bieber thinks that you're like helping him spiritually, why wouldn't he just give you the card at Barney's or whatever and say, take whatever you want? I know for a fact that's happened. It's just crazy.
And that's what do you do with that? Because is there anything in the Bible to like say, don't take a gift?
No, I mean, I think that it's serving the gift giver to accept a gift.
Right.
I think there's, but you can also have wisdom in where you wear or display that gift. Like,
sure.
Could you not wear it on a huge stage in front of thousands of people? Maybe. Or like, I think there's wisdom in choosing when and where to kind of use those gifts. But yeah, I'm with you. Like, how would it feel if you really appreciated something that somebody did and you like sacrificed something to buy someone a nice gift or a watch or something that you knew that they really wanted, but then you gave it to them and they said, nah, I don't want people on the internet to think that I'm, it's like, no, the thing to serve them is to accept it so that they're like blessed by the generosity that they're wanting to show you. And now I'm not a legalist. I like nice things. Like, I live in North Dallas, bro. Like, I'm not a poverty gospel dude. And nor do I expect, like, pastors have a hard job, man. I just think that there's an element of wisdom that some could probably do a better job of showing, or like at least taking note of the gravity of their position and not treating it like a game.
Sure. Yeah.
This is unrelated. Brandon, did you say you were in the NBA?
No, I played overseas.
Oh, okay. Who'd you play for?
I played for a team down in Mexico, and then my second season I was playing just outside of Shanghai.
Shanghai, okay. What's your last name?
Smith.
Oh, okay.
Brandon Smith.
Popular last name.
Yeah, I know. You search up Brandon Smith, it's like there's 100 others, you know? I played at Cal. So I ended up playing against, let me see, the youngest Holiday when he was at University of Washington. Yeah.
Yeah, sweet. Yeah, he's at the Hawks now. And Justin played overseas. He's played in Kosovo, and I think he played in Lithuania or something.
Yeah.
That's a grind out there, bro.
Dude, props it is. To you for it's doing a, it. And it's funny because I got hurt my second season, 2.5 months in. And at this time, too, my mental health was pretty shitty. I'm not going to lie. And, you know, just
by the, yourself in a foreign country.
Yeah. In communist China. Like, you know, not yeah. not ideal, you know. So, you know, not to mention, too, like your abilities to what you feel connected with all your people back home is completely cut off.
Yeah.
So I hurt my
right. They're watching you.
Yeah. I hurt my right wrist really bad. Mental health, not a good place. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to come home early. So I came home early and I'm thinking, all right, I'm going to get home. I'm going to get regrouped, get my mind right, get my body right. And I'm going to head back out. I'll probably join in maybe another like spring league in Puerto Rico or something like that, you know? And so I come back and within 2 months of coming back, I meet the love of my life. And start the long distance thing, you know? So it was kind of like, I thought, you know what? I'm probably still going to go out and then change the plans. So awesome. I'm still coaching now. I do a ton of like training with kids and stuff.
Nice.
And so it's cool. So,
and you're married or are you still dating?
I am married. Yeah.
Congrats to you.
So yeah.
Yeah, it feels like an upgrade.
Yeah. I traded a dream for the ultimate dream for me, you know?
Yeah.
So
love that.
Yeah.
And you're, how long have you been married, Ben?
Sorry to derail it. I was
No, you're good.
I've been married 9 years in June. We got married right before. So I was in the Marine Corps at the time when I married my dream of a wife. And 6 months later, after we got married, I got deployed to Romania. And so our like second half of our first year marriage was 7 months of long distance.
Wow. I
would not recommend.
Yeah.
But we made it. And we have, a 2-year-old son, another one on the way. And she's awesome. Stacy is her name.
Oh, wow. Congrats, man. So 9 years?
9 years. Yeah. Where'd you grow up at?
North Louisiana, Ruston, okay. Louisiana.
Nice. And my wife's from Alabama.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
Man, did she go to Alabama?
No, she went to University of Northern Alabama. UNA out there in Florence.
That's a thick accent over there in Alabama.
Yeah, it is. Surprisingly, she doesn't have an accent because she always had her sights set on moving to LA, which is crazy. So we ended up both, I'm originally from the Bay Area. Okay. And so she didn't like having a Southern accent.
So she like stopped it.
She just was like, I'm not going to talk in an accent.
So dude, that's wild.
My wife's like willpower is insane. And so it's hilarious. So we end up meeting and it was it, you know? And so once we got married, she moved to San Francisco where I was at the time. And then 7 months into being married, she got a job opportunity down here in fashion. And they moved us down here. And so,
What does she do? Or who does
she currently is working for the creative manager, Kim Schwab over at Skims.
Oh, okay.
So like she just texted me today.
Kardashian's brand, right?
Yes. Yeah. So, Kim is the creative director of Skims, which is Kim Kardashian's brand. Also Good American, which is Khloe's brand. And then they're working on kind of another secret Kylie thing. So like today she just texted me and she's like, I'm at the studio with Pink. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Like tomorrow Ice Spice is coming in. And so
that's crazy.
Yeah. So
what a life.
Yeah. So she's my wife is killer, man, what she does. So and her boss is, I mean, she's a creative genius. She's really one of the main reasons why Yeezy was so successful as a brand.
Dang.
Is because Kim Schwab.
Wow.
And another crazy story. This is totally going a different direction. So Victoria's Secret has this kind of like alter ego brand called Pink.
Yeah.
So Kim was the person who originally started Pink and designed their first collection. And it had like a little dog on the sweatpants and the numbers 89 on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Kim's idea.
Really?
Kim was like,
some people have the knack, bro. That's
she's
so
insane.
Irritating.
Yeah. So before that, she helped rebrand Abercrombie and Fitch and then went over to Victoria Pink and then... she was with Yeezy for a minute. I mean, she is like, dude, she's
some people
insane.
Just have it.
Yeah. I can't even fathom that much pressure. I mean, but speaking of wives, you're, as far as your wife, how intermingled is she is with what you do? Or is she just kind of like, do what you do. I'll be over here. I'm gonna.
Yeah. She's been very supportive and has taught me off the ledge a few times, but she's not interested in like building a personal brand. She doesn't like attention that way. And at the time when I started the account, she was working at our mega church. I mean, it's got 10,000 members. And so we, at the beginning, we were concerned because we just didn't know. It was this weird, because at the time I was anonymous. Like, I was doing this anonymously. People didn't know who I was. And we didn't know what our church's stance would be, if they were going to be weird about it or if they were going to fire her because it was bringing like negative attention to our church. We just had no clue. And we didn't have any kind of playbook for this.
So the pastors at your church were hearing about it.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Everyone knew about it. Yeah. Okay. Eventually, I talked with our pastor about it just to get his thoughts, because I didn't want Stace to get fired or something for something that I did on Instagram. And so I wanted to like get a level playing field and just see what they thought. And they supported it. And they actually reinforced that there was this kind of culture of, I call it a self-licking ice cream cone, where basically you and your buddies all have your mega churches and you preach and then write books off of what you preach and then sell that book to your congregation and then get invited to speak at your buddies' conferences for honorariums and then sell your book at those conferences and their churches. And then you're a New York Times bestseller, you rinse and repeat. It's a pretty good little business model. And so he was the pastor of a church of 10,000 members or so, and validated that did happen. And so ultimately it was good. It was good to get his wisdom about how to handle everything. And I credit a lot of those conversations to why I didn't like why it's lasted so long and didn't just kind of like fizzle out. Cause this wasn't supposed to be a thing, nor was it supposed to last for multiple years. But I intentionally tried to go slow with the opportunities that came from it. Like the Today Show asked me to come on within like a month of starting the account. Like they wanted me to come on the Today Show and like confront some of these pastors. And I ultimately told them no, because I didn't see the upside other than just like clout or like more followers. So it was some wise people that spoke into that I think protected me from probably getting myself into situations that I couldn't handle at the time. I could probably handle them now that I'm more experienced, but at the time I just had no concept for how to handle all that attention.
Thanks so much, y'all, for listening to part one of this episode. We appreciate it greatly. Hey, like and subscribe if you guys are feeling this. Share it with your friends. We appreciate it so much. Please come back next week for part two. Love you.